Welcome back to the Villain Edit, where two allegedly smart people talk about the dumb reality shows they watch. I'm Monty Ashley.
Hi, I'm Ryas Hall.
So, Ryas, did we watch some dumb shows this week or what?
Oh, man. I missed some days of work, and that gave me even more time to watch dumb shows.
It's true. We're all caught up. Our TiVo is empty right now. Terrifying.
It is a vast wasteland of emptiness. Usually it's a vast wasteland of garbage TV shows.
Speaking of a vast wasteland, The Bachelor went to Finland.
Yes, they did.
Take that, Finland. You burnt. So, on The Bachelor, they said the usual nonsense about moving my relationships forward, which I really enjoyed because the moment he said that in his voiceover, we saw a shot of him making out with what's-her-name in a swamp.
Oh, yeah. And Raven. He was making out with Raven in a swamp.
I don't think you should move your relationship directly into the swamp.
Nah, it usually takes a few months for it to end up there.
Now, The Bachelor was only 1 hour this week because Nick is very bad at being The Bachelor. And it started with former Bachelorette Andy, who I believe was brought in to coach him.
Yeah, it seems that way.
Like, she had to look him in the eye and say, but you have to pick someone. And even then he was like, well, I don't know. I'm not going to pick someone just because she's the last one standing. And she's like, that's what you do.
That's your whole job. You have one thing to do. It's pick a woman.
It doesn't matter if you never see her again after the cameras go off. That's kind of expected, but you have to whittle it down to one woman and then pick that woman.
He doesn't seem to get that. Ugh. He seems to be having a terrible time with it, and it makes him cry.
Yeah. So, at the beginning of the episode, he was down to four women because he's bad at being the Bachelor, and that means his eliminations happened at the beginning of the episode. And they were Raven, Rachel, Vanessa, and Corinne. And we know that Rachel is the next Bachelorette, so she's probably not going to win. And we've known this for 3 weeks, so every time we're thinking,
well, he's got to eliminate Rachel, right?
So they go to a commercial, and we see Raven in Romantic Finland with him.
Yeah, this was really poorly planned.
So first rose goes to Raven. All right, seems fine. She seems nice. Too nice for this jerk.
Yeah, she deserves better.
Next rose goes to Rachel. Because there's no reason. Just don't tell people it's Rachel.
Yeah. Why do you give her a rose when everyone knows that she's not going to win?
Well, it's really a question of why did they tell us so early? And I think they just gave up on this season at this point.
Or they may have. I wish I could give up on this season at this point.
No, we're in. Then we were down to Vanessa and Corinne. Vanessa got the rose and Corinne seemed sad.
So sad.
She was smiling a lot, but also crying. There was one shot where it looked to me like she had not just tears, but also snot coming out her nose.
Yeah, she was really crying.
Eventually, she's in the limo, and she said that she's done with everything. And at this point, we're 24 minutes into a one-hour episode.
Yeah.
So, it's taken half the runtime to eliminate one person.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we zoom out to Finland, where they're going the fantasy suite. That's where people have sex.
Ostensibly, they don't have to have sex. It's not in the contract, apparently.
Yeah.
It's the place where they get to spend the night together, and doing whatever.
They get their separate hotel rooms, but also the fantasy suite, which is one of those bungalows that's just a bed, and you can see the northern lights at the northern lights.
Yeah, it's got a glass ceiling. It's really lovely.
It's so nice. And Nick and Raven had their dinner, and they get the little note from Chris Harrison, who's allegedly the host, although I've never seen him do anything.
He does show up every once in a while, and every time he shows up, I'm like, who is that strange man in the corner of the screen?
Could the show be about him? He can't be any worse than Nick. And there's a note saying, if you choose to forego your hotel room, you may spend the night in the fantasy suite. And there's a really cool key, which I hope is actually the key for that suite.
I don't think it is. I think it was a generic skeleton-type key, because it looked like something I have that would open the china cabinet.
But it could have been. I mean, if you go to the trouble of making a cool bungalow with windows just so people can watch the northern lights, which aren't even there all the time, do you really give it an electronic key card thing? give it a cool key.
Like a skeleton key so that any wandering moose herder can just come into your room at any moment and steal all your stuff?
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. All right, I'm fine with that.
Let's see. Raven told him she loves him and also said that she has never had an orgasm.
She's only ever dated one person seriously before Nick, and he was a jerk and she didn't trust him, and therefore...
Well, I think what she said was her ex never gave her an orgasm, which is not the same thing as saying she's never had an orgasm.
I guess.
Anyway,
But I don't want to go into too much detail here because it's kind of gross. Right. But they showed us the clip of her saying that she had never had an orgasm like 52 times.
Yeah, they're very happy with that clip. That clip is second only to Corinne's Platinum Vagine, which somehow made it into this episode after Corinne was gone, because they are already having to schedule an hour of Meet the Women and back, because
Right. They
have to stretch out time. So next week is 3 hours of Romantic Finland. And then Nick did kind of a Rocky thing after the credits.
Oh, yeah, and then after the credits, it's just pictures of Nick out in the forest chopping wood, and running through the snow and waving his arms around.
And doing push-ups.
And it was just weird. He's got his shirt on the whole time.
Yeah. I could practically see the producer saying, no, man, keep working out. No. Let's see some jumping jacks. It's a little like the group dates where the women had to play volleyball for his amusement.
Yeah. Now he has payback. He has to jog through the snow.
Yeah. It was not super interesting of an episode.
He did end up going to the fantasy suite with Raven, and they had dinner, and then of course the show was over.
Yeah, presumably we will find out all the horrifying details next week, and then twice more. So it seems like you're not super into The Bachelor, Rias.
I've never been super into The Bachelor, but I'm willing to ride it out.
I'm telling you, the 20 minutes I watched was packed full of stuff, and then since then...
I know, I saw the crazy, crazy track and field episode. That's what drew me in.
Yeah. All right. Next is My Big Fat Fabulous Life.
Which is a show that I watch. What did happen this week? Well, they're warming up for their ridiculous fat girl dance-off.
People are now explicitly saying... You know, it's like in You Got Served or Bring It On, which it's not like Bring It On, Bring It On. It's cheerleading, not dancing.
Right. And I have a real problem with this because I feel like the reason that Whitney started Fat Girl Dance Off was so that plus size women could go and have fun and learn some dance moves, but maybe not be super competitive about it and just learn to enjoy themselves and enjoy the fact that they could move their bodies around. Because I think that's important and awesome. But the other dance class, which is called the Trophy Wives Dance Class, are super competitive, and they're like, oh yeah, we're going to kick your ass in the dance contest. And I don't think that Whitney's dance class is A, up to that, or B, should participate in it.
But they were challenged on the radio, so they have to do it.
Right. Even though Whitney went over and told the other girl, well, she's like, I'm putting a stop to the dance contest. And what she actually did was go over to the other dance class and say, you can back out if you want.
And the other girl, who is extremely sassy, said, hell! See how sassy that was?
That was very sassy.
No. So Whitney has a plan now, because she and some of the other girls went entirely spontaneously to a workout session
involving drumsticks.
So now she's like, we're going to bring drumsticks.
They're going to be like Morris dancers. It's going to be like Morris dancing. I can't condone it, but I am looking forward to seeing it.
Now, my proposal is that they go full-on step-up 3D with this. So the final dance-off has crazy CGI everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Set off the sprinklers. Have these girls suddenly be doing backflips and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bring the slow motion. Just make it nuts.
Yeah.
Speaking of the radio, Whitney got to write a question for Hillary Clinton that...
got asked on the air. That was her big excitement.
I don't understand the whole radio station segments of those.
It started with Real World. Remember they worked at the end?
Yeah.
And it seems like radio station what do you call it, radio station intern is the go-to job for reality TV show people. I don't understand that. It seems weird.
But Whitney has a television show. Like, she keeps worrying about, maybe I'll get to be heard on the radio while she's in her television show.
Yeah, it seems odd. It's like, why do you want to be heard on the radio? You're already pretty famous. But
she's way more famous than her boss, who, by the way, is excellent at his job.
He is. He's very good at keeping the show going.
We see little whip-arounds of, like, the radio show where people are harassing her because she hardly ever comes into work and then complains that some other intern gets more work than she does. And every time there's a pause of, like, half a beat, the guy who's the actual radio professional makes a joke, asks somebody a question, just keeps it going.
Yeah.
I'd like the show to be about him.
That's what you think. It's like a morning zoo type show.
Behind the scenes of a morning zoo? I'd watch that. It'd be more.
And you'd probably make me watch it too, you monster.
This show had a subplot in which Whitney's mother bought a wig.
Well, her father had always wanted to date a blonde, and she thought it would be a fun surprise for their 39th anniversary. And I think it was. I like Whitney's mom a lot. I think she's very nice.
I think she has exactly the same voice as Tree Trunks from Adventure Time.
Well, I think Tree Trunks is very nice, too.
I agree.
Then Whitney met an old friend from college, the experimental college, I'm guessing, and they had a lesbian date where they went horseback riding.
Well, that doesn't sound very lesbian, Rias.
It didn't sound very lesbian to me either, but apparently it was because they kissed at the end of it.
Yep.
And Whitney's like, now, she's like, oh, I'm into her now. So good for you, Whitney.
I'm guessing her lesbian phase will last as long as this season's pregnancy phase, where she has to go around and tell everybody, get their reaction, and then say, actually, no.
Well, you know, they had an episode a while back when her mom found her naked with that other woman that was giving her a massage, and her mom was like, even if you are gay or bi, I still accept and love you. Imagine that in the voice of Tree Trunks. It was pretty nice.
Oh, my. So, I know we said we weren't going to watch Hunted anymore.
But then we found out it was the last ever episode, and we're like, oh, well, the last of the season.
And also, more importantly, somebody on Twitter, whose name I'm going to remember almost immediately, sent me a link to a great article on Reality Blurred that shared the rules of Hunted. Now, my problem all along with Hunted was that there are clearly rules and you aren't telling us what they are, and that makes me mad. It was Eric at DCow36. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
So, Reality Blurred has been doing great work on this, and they tracked down some radio interviews with people who have been on the show. So, here are some of the rules that people on Hunted had to follow.
Right, the competitors.
Yeah. One, teams must move every 48 hours. Now, that alone is a rule you need to tell the audience, because the audience, universally, while watching Hunted, was saying, why are these idiots moving?
I was like, just stay in the swamp. You're doing so well in the swamp. No one knows you there. Yeah,
you have
a tent.
Yeah. Number two, teams cannot return to the same place twice. So once you've been to a place, you can't go back to it, even though it was nice and safe.
Right.
Number three, teams cannot be helped by the same person twice.
Oh.
So they make you burn through all your contacts as quickly as possible.
Right.
Rule four, teams have to use the ATM twice during the competition. And now that's important because whenever you use the ATM, the hunter team immediately gets told your location.
Right. Which, pushes it in their favor.
So you can only get $100 and you can't visit the ATM more than once in a day. So that is a rule where that you are required, even if you're safe and you've got all your plans, you're required just to let the hunters know where you are.
Uh-huh, at some point.
So this is not like being on the run. And again, I would be fine with this if they told us the rules, then we'd say, okay, here's the game. These people follow these rules, these people follow these rules. But instead,
They're like, oh, they're on the run.
We get
with no rules.
And then we see the hunters going, oh, they made a mistake. They went to the ATM. You made them go to the ATM.
Yeah, they had no choice.
Rule number six, no one can give the teams money. like, even if you have friends and you say, if we win this, we get $250,000. So,
could borrow like $5 for bus fare.
Yeah. You can't do that. Rule number 7, producers can create a rule or take away a rule at any time.
This is a terrible rule.
Because apparently what David and Emily did was they had one of their friends buy 15 burner phones, give them all to them, so that way they wouldn't ever have to use a burner phone twice, and they'd be impossible to track. And the producer said, no, that makes it too likely that you'll win. You can't do that. You can't change the rules in the middle of it. And you especially can't do that if the producers, the ones who are on the hook for $250,000, are the ones who get to decide what's legal.
Right. What if they decide on the last day that it's against the rules for anyone to win this game?
Yeah. So you'll notice all of these rules are what the hunted teams are allowed to do.
There don't seem to be any rules regulating the hunters because they're just sitting in a base having information fed to them by the producers.
Yep. Now, things got even more ridiculous in the finale, and I want to go over that really quick. I assumed that because of the way the show had been set up, all you had to do to win was stay hidden for 28 days. That is not the case. On day 26 or so, you have to learn your escape details, which means log into a website, which will immediately tell the hunters where you are.
Ugh.
Then you had to go to an assigned ATM, which would immediately tell the hunters
where you
are
going.
Then you have to travel 2.7 miles on foot to an airplane you've been assigned to. And at each of those points, so like you go to the bank and you say, I'm here to get my money. And they say, eh, it's around back. Now, both team members have to carry $125,000 in cash and run
in a sack
and run 2.7 miles while the hunters have just been told they are at this exact location. They are going to fly away. All you have to do is locate the nearest airplane strip or seaplane, which they could do immediately, and get there first. Now, as it happens, the two teams that got that far did both win. But these final day rules, where there are just multiple times where they say,
yeah, it's ridiculous.
You've hidden too long. You have to tell us where you are. That's not just bad rules. That's poor sportsmanship.
Absolutely.
So
we're opposed to it.
So opposed to it.
But the good thing is that it is. The good thing is that it's over. That was the season finale.
Yep.
And people are questioning whether it will come back next season, and I do not think it will.
No, it was. I don't know what the UK version was like. This version was just pretty bad. Like, if you want to have a lot of rules, just tell us what the rules are and make them fair. Because as it is, constantly telling us how powerful the hunters are and how good they are at their job isn't that impressive. When I now know how many forced mistakes people had to make. All right.
So we're going to take a little break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about Face Off, MC Junior, and something that I have listed as Shranduris. So, Monty, you decipher my notes while I talk a little bit about our podcast. This is the time of year when we remind you that you can support us by becoming a member of The Incomparable.
Please do that.
Just sign up for a monthly or annual pledge, and you can support this podcast directly. All you need to do is go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up, and then pick the shows on the network you'd like to support. Just check the box for the villain edit, and your contribution will come to us, and we will use it for villainous purposes.
And what will people get if they do such a thing, Rias, besides the warm feeling of knowing that you are a patron of the arts and making this actually in some way worthwhile?
Well, you can receive a lot of extras. We'll be doing bonus audio, there's a live bootleg feed of The Incomparable, and there's even a Slack group that is members only where you can come talk to us about the terrible reality shows you watch.
Yeah, everybody, I don't know if everybody's doing it. Almost all the shows are doing special members-only episodes.
And that includes us. And our special members-only episode is going to be about the early, early days of reality TV.
This is stuff before, well before, The Real World or Survivor. Sort of the show, the things that led to reality television as we know it. It's a really interesting stuff, I think. Also, yeah. I'll say that the bonus episode for the main Incomparable show, I am on that one, and I think it's really good, and people will enjoy it.
So anyway, if you want to hear all that, then just go to incomparable.com/members, sign up, and click to support The Villain Edit.
And any other shows you listen to that you enjoy.
You can contribute at $5, $10, or $20 a month, and or you can do an annual donation. If you're already a member, you can increase your pledge later once you hear how awesome we are. And if you'd like to support us, you know where to go.
Yep.
Theincomparable.com/members.
And I want to say, there's no pressure here. You are, of course, free to listen to this fine free program. But if you find yourself moved by generosity, this is how you would do that.
Thank you.
Now, Face Off.
Face Off.
Bum, bum, bum. Face Off went beyond Thunderdome, which is actually the same headline I used for my write-up on previously.tv. They got to do a cool
post-apocalyptic wasteland warriors, yeah. I believe was what they were supposed to do. It started off with each one getting to choose an apocalypse car.
Yeah, there was a stretch limo there with
the VW bug with some guns on it. There's all kinds of stuff. I think they got this from the people that do Wasteland Weekend, which is a thing down in California where it's kind of like Burning Man, except it's all Mad Max themed. And yeah. It's just for one weekend. It looks amazing. I've always wanted to go, but I didn't. But as soon as the cars came around the corner, Sig yelled, "Oh my God, Wasteland cars." Yeah. So he knows the score.
Sig and George were the most excited about this. They're generally the most excited about stuff.
They're lively little scamps.
Yeah. The gimmick here was that each car... There was very little about how your look ended up interacting with the car you were assigned. But everyone had a bucket of auto parts that they had to incorporate into their makeup.
Yeah.
Like, take this alternator and have it sticking out of your guy's shoulder and make it make sense.
Yeah, some people took the make your character match your car much more seriously. The guys that had the motorcycle thing, that had the motorcycle, really wanted to incorporate a motorcycle theme. So they ended up making some swords that the handguards were made out of cut-up motorcycle fenders.
Yeah, and the curve of their swords were supposed to look like motorcycle wheels. I had some problems with them because they had two big flags sticking off the shoulders, like samurai flags, which is Thunderdome-y. Like, there's that guy in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome with a doll head on a stick.
Oh, yeah, that guy's in Road Warrior, too.
But you can't really ride a motorcycle with flags sticking off your back. You're going to
Yes, you can. John Wilkie has done it.
And also, you can't ride with two scimitars, one in each hand.
You cannot ride with two scimitars, one in each hand.
Even if you have a foot throttle, put your hand... I know it's the wasteland and nobody's wearing helmets, but at least hold the handlebars.
Yeah, it's the wasteland. Riding on sand, it's not really that easy. Riding on sand with one hand, no, you're not going to be able to do that. The flags, I liked the flags. I thought they added something to the silhouette and made it look much more like an interesting character.
My favorite character was the one Sig and George did. They did a lot of burn scars, which everyone else did too.
Yeah, it was like Battle of the Burn Scars this week.
But there was an attitude there, especially with the way the character was smoking, that really sold it for me.
Their model sold their makeup this week. She did a great job. It was a good makeup, but it was basically an all-over burn scar makeup. But the attitude that their model had was just awesome.
And this was a to-be-continued episode, which I found annoying.
I'm looking forward to it.
So what happened was the bottom three teams, who were Kaylin and Melissa, Rachel and Gage, and Logan and Adam, were all given very specific criticism during the judging. Like, Kaylin and Melissa, Glenn Hedrick said her facial makeup could use a lot more erosion. They were the ones with, like, the bright gold stripe.
Yeah, there was a lot of... the makeup looked too clean.
Yeah.
And then there were some other people whose makeup was too dirty.
Yep. That was Logan and Adam. They had a cool idea, but they covered it up too much. So they all got given specific feedback, and then they were told, you have an hour to fix everything.
And next week, we'll find out what happened in that hour. So that was kind of annoying. But the winners of the challenge...
Those were Sig and George.
As it should be.
Yep. So, face off.
That was a fun episode.
It was a fun episode. I'm a little down on it just because the pacing was weird. And I'm becoming increasingly cranky about non-elimination episodes where they just shove the elimination into the next episode. Because I'm worried about next week... What we're going to have...
Are we going to lose four people next week? Because we'll have an elimination at the end? No, because next week's non-elimination episode.
But the next week, I figure at least the first 10 minutes are going to be spent with the results of this week. So then that reduces the time left over for whatever we're doing next week.
And one of the best makeups ended up in the bottom four next week. And that was just because they went to Clive Barker with it. It was a beautiful makeup.
Yeah.
And it looked great, but it was not a human wasteland person.
Yeah.
And that was a problem. It looked like an awesome motorcycle riding Cenobite.
Which, I would watch that show. Let's see, MasterChef Junior, we just finished watching. What happened on MasterChef Junior?
Lots of screaming children, more than I remember in past seasons.
Yeah, this show believes my favorite thing about children are that either they are all shrieking in excitement at the same time, or a couple of them are sobbing in despair. And the things that happen between that, I really like on this show.
Yeah, I like watching the kids concentrating and achieving things. That's what excites me about the show. It's not children screaming and jumping around gleefully.
Or like when Gordon has to talk down a panicking child and say, here's what you can do. Let me show you a trick. You can try this. You're not doomed. Everything's going to be fine. Just stay with it. That's great. When Gordon's just getting fudge dumped on him, I feel like...
I don't like that. Here, we're going to pour some... Well, I'm sure someone likes seeing Gordon Ramsay getting fudge dumped all over him.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily think a show full of children wants to court that demographic.
So, what did they make on this episode?
So, this episode, the first challenge was to see who could make the most perfect corn dogs in the least amount of time.
And this was only six of the kids, with everybody else off to the side
shouting. Right. So, there was a lot of screaming during it. Also, I'm not sure I want a million screaming children and a challenge involving speed and hot oil.
Do you feel that in some way the children might have panicked and grievously injured themselves?
I had a really hard time watching it. I was sure someone was going to get a serious burn.
That would be an amazing episode.
I have a fear of working of hot oil, just even like when I'm cooking bacon. And watching these children with these deep fat fryers holding these corn dogs gently under it, because you have to hold them for a minute before you drop them in, terrifying.
Especially because the kids were in such a hurry, they frequently weren't doing that. They just kind of throw the corn dogs at the oil.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, someone's going to lose an eye. But somehow, no one lost an eye. There was one little girl, her name is Justice, and I'm convinced she's going to grow up to be a superhero. Her name is Justice, spelled J-U-S-T-I-S-E. T-I-S-E.
Yes.
Her parents are both police officers.
She's frighteningly composed.
She is frighteningly composed, incredibly telegenic, and she was working like six fryers all at once, and she won the challenge. It was amazing.
It also made you really want a corn dog.
It did make me want a corn dog, but I love corn dogs. I admit it.
And then after that, we got to see Mayim Bialik of Blossom and Big Bang Theory come out and order the children to make a vegan hamburger, on account of she is vegan.
Well, the kids were all screaming and excited when she said it was a burger, but then the word vegan came out and a hush fell over the crowd.
The one kid told us he's from Texas. Did you know he's from Texas?
Shane the Train?
He's from Texas.
He's never eaten a meal that didn't have meat in it.
That's weird. That can't be safe.
Yeah. Kid shriek again.
Eddie, what is a small, cute kid who was in a complete panic the entire time.
Eddie was adorable.
He did at one point say, eating vegan food is like eating vegetables all day. And I think he's right.
I think he's pretty close on that, yeah. But he, when they found the challenge, as soon as he ran into the freezer, he lost it. He just was unable to choose ingredients. He didn't know where to go, what he was doing. And he lost his composure completely and never quite got it back for the rest of the episode.
The other person who got some sort of storyline was Sydney, who's, I'm guessing, everybody's favorite. She's certainly my favorite.
She is absolutely an adorable child.
She dropped her vegan hamburger with, like, 2 minutes to spare.
Oh, less than that, like 30 seconds. Like, just she splattered. Was plating, and it fell on the floor and exploded. So what she had to do was to take the raw ingredients for the hamburger and just put them on the bun. Now, the raw ingredients in a vegan burger aren't going to kill you. There's no meat in there or anything that can hurt you.
Yeah, she was completely correct that might as well do this. At least we'll see how it tastes. And she used some of the oil from the pan to kind of bind it together.
She really did her best to come out. But before that, when she dropped the burger, she was absolutely hysterical. And it was...
I don't like that.
It was heart-wrenching to watch. It broke my heart.
And that happened, of course, going into commercial, so that before and after the commercial, we could see her bursting into tears. And then at the end of the episode, she's one of the four kids who's up for elimination, and she's in tears. And
oh, but that's where I stopped watching, because I saw a cute bird on the internet.
Yeah, Raya saw a cute bird on the internet.
So I missed the next few minutes of the show. That'll happen.
The four kids are at the end of the episode. Two of them stay, two of them go. I don't remember who the other two are, but Eddie and Sydney were in there.
It was Eddie and Sydney. It was... I don't remember.
That's right.
Sam.
Oh, nice.
Sam, who wanted to make a Tex, who's talking about how he's making a Tex-Mex burger because he's from Alabama.
Yeah. I mean, well, what happened was he said, I'm going to put these ingredients in. And Christina said, those sound like Tex-Mex ingredients. Because this show kind of believes that you only ever eat from the cuisine of your local area. And then Sam said...
Yeah, the show's weird about that. They're constantly harping on where the kids are from. Like the kids from Texas have to say they're from Texas almost every time they're on screen.
And then Sam said, well, I'm from Alabama, which is, like... not where Tex-Mex is, really?
No, Tex-Mex is a very specifically branded food area.
But yeah, Sam and Eddie went home, Sydney stayed, everybody's happy. There was also a commercial for what is alleged to be a new show, The F Word, with Gordon Ramsay. Now this is...
That show's been on forever!
I assume it's going to be like the British show, Gordon Ramsay's The F Word, which if it is, it's great, because that was the first time I actually got to see... non-angry Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah, he's nice on that show.
Up until I saw the British F Word, I only knew of Gordon Ramsay as the Kitchen Nightmares, Hell's Kitchen profane monster.
Right, he wants to call you a donkey.
Right, but on the F Word, he hung out with his kids and was adorable.
Yeah, I actually got a sense that he wasn't completely evil.
And he'll show you how to cook things and actually show you how it works. So, assuming that they let him do that here, I think that'll be a fine show.
I think it'll be okay.
Now,
the next show we just stumbled across by accident.
Yes.
It's on MTV2, I believe, which is always your hallmark of high-quality television.
Here's the thing about the villain edit. There are certain kinds of reality shows I really enjoy watching. And I wish there'd be more of, like, Work of Art. I really enjoyed.
Work of Art was great.
Or there's shows that I'm fascinated by why they are doing them. And there's no real, as far as I can tell, news source for finding out when those are going to air.
Right. So, like, the ones that I liked Work of Art. That was just a crazy nonsense show with competitive artists, but they were all, it was weird. And then I really like, what's the body painting one?
Well, Skin Wars.
Skin Wars is really good. I guess I like competitive artistic challenge shows.
Where there's a profession, or even if it's just a hobby, where people are skilled at something, so you can see people good at something competing with each other.
Competing with other people who are good at something.
Yeah, so they're like showing off for my amusement. That's cool. Like, we watched that Window Warriors show.
Window Warriors was people who knew how to decorate windows.
It was a pretty bad show, and it was very short. But I did get a sense of, here's some of the skills and knowledge that goes into this, and I really enjoyed that.
What about that competitive steampunk show?
Steampunked?
I believe that was called Steampunked.
That turned into just an interior design show.
Yeah.
And it was all team-based, and I don't think that works really
well.
Nah,
I didn't like
anyway,
it very much.
The point is, we ran out of stuff to watch. Rias was kind of flipping through the channels, and I saw a show called Stranded with $1 Million, and this was its first episode.
Well, we can't refuse to watch Stranded with $1 Million.
Here's how this works. A bunch of idiots, 10 people, are dropped on an island. Now, to make it more isolated than Survivor or Naked and Afraid, they are alleged to be completely alone. All the filming is done with drones and robo-cameras. Now, I'm not sure I believe that. But we did see a lot of shots of drones.
Yes, so they're very proud of the drones that they have, whether or not they're filming all the show with them. There's some footage that is obviously drone footage, and there's some footage that is obviously not drone footage.
Now, the idea is, if you last all 40 days...
30 days. It's a 30-day challenge.
Are you sure?
Yep, I wrote it down.
Fine. If you last the whole time, whoever lasts that long splits the entire pot of $1 million. But you can buy things like... You can buy a two-person tent for $30,000. So the idea is that you will be sitting around going, oh, God, I wish we had a fire, and then...
Now, I got the impression that the contestants didn't really know that much about the show they were going into.
Yes, they seemed to be learning along with us.
To be learning along with us that they were going to be dumped on an island with no supplies.
So the way it works is you get $100,000 at a time, and
there are 10 hidden caches of $100,000.
And occasionally a note will be dropped from a drone saying, you have to pick up and move. Everybody walk 5 miles, and then...
I think every 4 days?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. And they give them a map to where the next cache is. Then when you find the next cache, you get the chance to purchase more supplies.
So that's how the show is supposed to work. You get the idea. It's like Naked and Afraid... But trying to force people to spend their precious money.
And also, the people on Naked and Afraid have some survival skills, but the people on Stranded with $1 Million, they don't... I mean, there's some guys that were in the army and stuff, but most of them seem to be just kind of your normal people that don't have survival skills.
One girl, I don't want to stereotype her, but the way she introduced herself was by saying, it's Gina, like vagina.
That doesn't even make sense. Otherwise, her name would be Gina.
She said vagina.
Well.
That's all she's going for.
All right.
Now, this show has a jerk on it. His name's Cody. If you're listening to this, Cody, you came off like a huge jerk. Nice going.
You got the villain edit.
He gave himself the villain edit.
Oh, he's the worst.
So, Cody is in the Texas National Guard, and he calls himself an alpha male. And his plan is to, he doesn't think people are going to make it. Not like him, because he's an alpha male.
Right.
So he spends a lot of his time...
trying to browbeat the other people into quitting.
He doesn't want anybody to buy anything. He doesn't want to buy a machete. He doesn't want to buy a fire starter. Doesn't want to buy a tent. Because he figures he's tough enough to survive without that stuff. So if it's harder to survive for the first week or so, then people will drop out. Then it'll be just him and his pals. They can buy the necessary stuff. There'll be fewer people to split the money with and less money spent, so everything's going to be fine.
Right. And I wouldn't call that a bad strategy.
No, it's perfectly logical.
It's perfectly logical, but it is evil.
And he's a pretty big jerk about it, and
He tries to intimidate the women.
Yeah.
This woman dropped something on the beach, and he was like, you go pick that up. It was a coconut shell.
Yeah, he was mad that people wanted him to make plates or bowls. He kept doing interviews where he'd say that his opponents are the weak-minded. And I gotta say, I don't think this is the personality the military wants to project. Like, ideally, if you're in this situation and somebody says... I'm in the army. What you want to think is, great, we're all going to be fine. We're all going to be a team. We're all going to work together. Nobody left behind. This guy's going to help us out.
You want to be able to say, okay, maybe we can become a cohesive unit. Not, it's every man for himself.
Yeah. Like, I don't... So everybody built a big shelter, and then Cody and his friend made a separate shelter where they could hide out and talk about
and
how...
And scheme. And talk about how weak everyone else is.
There is a survivor element in that somebody got arbitrarily chosen for a temptation.
For a temptation. That's where you get to take a friend and you go off into the trees and they offer you something. Now, it's going to cost you at least $30,000, whatever the thing is.
When you're buying supplies, that was a majority vote. But when you're by yourself with your friend, they were like, for $5,000, you can have pretzels. For $10,000, you can have this. For $15,000, you can have hamburgers. And they,
now, they had only been there for 4 days, but they were pretty rabid for hamburgers.
Yeah. They waffled a bit and they said, no, we're just going to spend the $15,000 for hamburgers, which I think is a good idea because it's protein.
Sure. Yeah.
And then they got back to everybody else and they had to say, no, a temptation. No, that just means it's like a challenge that we failed, so we couldn't do anything.
That's going to go over real well when the next person gets the temptation and comes back with a different story.
Well, my theory is that now everybody who goes on the temptation is in an unwilling alliance.
Mm.
Like, the next person that goes, assuming it's not one of the two people that went, and assuming the person they grab isn't one of those two people, they'll learn, oh, this is what a temptation is. Oh, if we spend the group's money, we get that stuff too. And now we know something that only four people do.
That's true.
And I think it spreads out from there until Cody goes on it, finds out everybody's been spending what he already thinks of as his money.
And then his head explodes, which would be hilarious.
But not hilarious enough to watch because this show was terrible.
Yeah. It sounds better when we talk about it than it actually is to watch, which is a shame. I do want to check back on it in a few weeks and see what's going on, but I don't think I can watch it every week.
No, everybody seemed miserable. One girl got so sick she couldn't walk.
She was a model, so she had no body fat, and then she was able to eat nothing but coconuts for
when they found out they had to walk for like 5 miles to the next one, she was like, I don't know if I could make it. And some people said, we'll carry you. And Cody said, maybe you should consider quitting, you know.
For the good of everyone.
And she rolled her eyes and everybody could tell what Cody was doing, which I kind of enjoyed. But I don't like any of these people. I would enjoy this show if it had gone a completely different direction, if everyone had immediately said, all right, we get $1 million if we win. Let's spend $100,000 of it right now
to make sure we have a machete and a fire starter.
Machete, fire starter, tents. Then we don't have to spend a lot of time building anything, and then we'll just kind of ride it out from there and go hunting with the machete or whatever. That I would enjoy if everybody work together, but it seems like they cast for more of a Lord of the Flies situation.
Yeah.
So that's Stranded with $1 million. It's on MTV or MTV2 or something.
I think it's on MTV2.
I will say that the ads were mostly for mobile games, candy, and acne cream.
All right.
Which tells you what they're going for there. Like how on The Bachelor, all the ads are for Beauty and the Beast because they somehow stumbled onto a property that has a prominent rose in it and is also about someone being trapped with somebody so long they fall in love with them.
Are you saying Beauty and the Beast is about Stockholm Syndrome?
No, don't be silly. That's in Sweden. It's about, like,
being trapped with someone until you fall in love with them.
Nice Syndrome or something.
Okay,
somewhere
fine.
In France. I think that does it for us. That's probably everything we watched. I will briefly say, we also watched Ultimate Beastmaster, but Raya says that's not a reality show, so you'll never know what we thought of it.
It's a sports show.
It's
That's a whole different podcast. Sports guys can talk about that.
It's Ninja Warrior.
It is Ninja Warrior.
With more aggressive theming. Okay, that's all for us. We're just keeping it real?
Okay.